listening to Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and we're here at Roberta's Pizza. This is the home of Heritage Radio Network, brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. And also today, our sponsor is Brooklyn Bowl, dubbed by Rolling Stone as one of the greatest places on earth. Brooklyn Bowl's timely blend of live music, food by Blue Ribbon, and of course, bowling is a perfect strike every time. It features diverse live music performances from Snoop Dogg to Dr. Dog, The Roots to Gaslight Anthem, Gogol Bordello to the Disco Biscuits, and as well as all the hottest and local and up-and-coming talent. Check out Brooklyn Bowl, 61 Wythe Ave in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Great. That's our latest sponsor, some friends in the neighborhood. So today we have a really, really great duo of guests today. I'll introduce Daniel Bowman-Simon. He runs the People's Garden NYC, peoplesgardennyc.org. He is also one of the two co-founders of the White House Organic Edible Garden Project. I totally messed that up. But it's basically, you guys all know about it. It's the project that really got petitions around and got the momentum around getting an edible garden on the lawn of the White House. So congratulations to that. And People's Garden is all about getting an edible garden on the lawn of the town hall in New York City. Did I get that right, Daniel?
We call it City Hall here. We're City big Hall. Enough to be a city. We're small in landmass. I mean,
it's
we are
town,
a small
York,
town on the Hudson.
New York town, town, right? No. Yeah. NYT?
Take what Sorry. We can get. Town Hall is a great place to see a concert. Not as good right. as Brooklyn Bowl, but...
I like the Brooklyn Bowl. It's
you
good.
Take the Brooklyn Bowl?
I saw the Black Lips. It's fun.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's our other guest. Evan, I can't pronounce your last name.
It's Shepke.
Shepke.
It's a weird one.
And you are a writer for Permaculture Magazine, and you have an e-zine about permaculture called...
It's called Punk Rock Permaculture e-zine, punkrockpermaculture.com.
And there's also permaculture.tv that you...
Yeah, I work with permaculture.tv doing production work, and I'll hopefully be live streaming with them through Ustream or live stream at the Northeast Permaculture Convergence in Maine. In a couple days.
So that's happening this week.
No, it's actually July 2nd through the 5th. So
okay.
Unity, Maine. So if you're interested, check out Northeast Permaculture Convergence.
So you'll be live streaming that from permaculture.tv, and everybody can kind of join in and see this conference as it happens.
Absolutely.
Technology, that's, modern tech. I love it.
It's probably not as good as being there, though, huh?
I'll also be there, but...
So obviously you're really into permaculture. What exactly is that, if you wouldn't mind just quickly summarizing or
sure.
You know?
Permaculture is a ecological design system, and it's based on natural principles, and it's to build regenerative human habitats or regenerative culture. That's how I think of it. But it was codified, the principles were kind of codified by this naturalist, a couple of different naturalists, but mainly... Bill Mollison and David Holmgren from Australia, but they're drawing from all sorts of knowledge from indigenous peoples and from all sorts of different fields. So the idea is you have all these different components and you arrange them in a way that works with relationships, not just like piecemeal. You know, you're really thinking about relationships, you're thinking about how to mimic natural ecologies in what you're doing. And so it works at all sorts of different levels of like scale, but it also works in all sorts of different fields. So I've been reading lately about like permaculture design and packaging principles or in packaging design, permaculture principles and packaging.
So not just city planning, it goes into
permaculture principles and IT infrastructure design. Like it's getting really out there, which is really what I want to see. I mean, I want to see it in the heart of like mainstream design consciousness.
That's great.
Yeah.
Daniel, is that something you take into consideration when you came up with like the People's Garden NYC? Is that all about creating, you know, a more sustainable city?
It is about creating a more sustainable city, and it's about involving and engaging a large swath of people in imagining what our city can be and sort of unifying them in one particular mission right now that ends up opening up space for a lot more good stuff to happen. So, for example, looking back on the White House, when we advocated that there should be a vegetable garden growing on the lawn of the White House, people sometimes kind of doubted it and said, well, that wouldn't matter that much, or you should spend your energy focusing on something else that's more manageable or that could serve more people. But what's ended up happening is that one garden has really sparked the imagination, consciousness of people all around the country and the First Lady herself. Living and seeing a garden every day is something that can be super rewarding to just about anybody, as I'm sure
you know.
That's terrific.
Did you get to meet Mrs. Obama?
I got a hug.
Oh, wow.
I asked her for a hug, but...
Oh, that's terrific. Do you wear that t-shirt every day, too? The People's Garden?
I have two of them.
Just kidding. Swap out. Yeah. Sorry. So that's like... So what... You know, now that you've gotten this... Now that we, as a nation, have seen, you know, this edible garden on White House, why go and make another one on New York City? I mean... I know that, like, there's other town halls, city halls, that have edible gardens, correct? How many are there? There's others,
sure.
Like...
I mean, it's hard to keep track of all the gardens. It's hard enough to database gardens on the Lower East Side, much less around the country. But Portland, Oregon has a beautiful vegetable garden.
In front of their city hall, though?
Yeah. Will Allen helped start a vegetable garden in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He runs Growing Power. San Francisco had... a beautiful victory garden in 2008. They're popping up. I heard somebody sent me a message on Facebook yesterday that Colorado Springs, Colorado has a city hall garden now. Why New York City? I mean, New York City is where I live. It's where I have roots. My great grandmother grew up in Flatbush. So why not focus on the place that I live? But as everybody knows, New York City is kind of a light unto.
Yeah,
I mean, we're a
beacon,
country in and of ourselves, so if people see what's going on here, and getting people who work and live in New York City to experience what a vegetable garden can be. So when the mayor climbs up the stairs or leaves City Hall every day to see that garden, to see kids interacting with it, to know that that garden, the petition is asking that the food grown there be donated to a nearby food pantry. There's over 1 million hungry people in this town right now. And why not have that intention when growing the food, that this food is actually for service?
Mm-hmm. And so when you go around and petition average New Yorkers, what is their reaction, do you think? Are they still like kind of aghast, like, which I'm sure you must have got a lot of shocked and confused people responses when you were first doing, you know, the White House petition, but
it's a shifted tide now. I think, okay. I mean, you still ask anybody to sign a petition and their face kind of freezes up and they just want to run the other way as fast as they can. But you meant, if you get the word...
I've never done that at all. When people come up to me in Union Square, I'm always... No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
You could try it. I mean, I invite you to go around with a clipboard one day if you're into it and ask people to sign this petition. Because as soon as you say the word garden, their face lights up again. And they're grabbing the pen out of your hand. I went to an Ozo Motley concert a few weeks ago. And some girl grabbed my clipboard, stole it. I didn't know where she went. And she came back and she had two sheets full of signatures. She was just... excited to
I would
out.
Totally do that. It's just to bring it to me next time.
It's a very different reaction than if you're like, do you have a minute for the environment? And I'm not to knock like PERGs or anything, because I have a lot of friends that have worked for PERGs. I know they do a lot of really great lobbying work in all sorts of different fields. But the thing about a garden is it's really engaging. And people get their hands in the soil and they actually like can see the physical manifestation of their efforts immediately, like within months. And that's a huge symbolic conscious shift, you know, and that's why what what he's doing with the getting a garden on the town or the city hall.
Sorry.
City Hall of New York City is...
also get a garden on town hall.
What we would really like to see is that not be a remarkable thing. Like, that should just be commonplace. And like... also things like permaculture should not be a word that I have to explain to people.
Right.
It shouldn't even be a word that is a catch term. It should be just like the way we think.
Right. And it's common understanding rather than this complicated scholarly sounding, you know, school of thought.
Exactly.
Garden is almost like the word garden. I actually don't know the etymology. We should find that out. But it's a word kind of like home that means something else to every different person, but it's a warm word.
How about if anybody knows the etymology of garden or has any questions for these guys, why don't you give us a call at 917-492-2128, I believe. I think I messed that up. 718-492-2128. Check it out. So another word I hear a lot is Gaia. Gaia Institute, Gaia's Soil, which I use on my rooftop garden. And your Twitter hashtag, Evan, is Gaia Punk. What the hell is that word? I know, but I'm just asking.
Well, that word, it's supposedly the kind of like consciousness of the earth. I believe it was
Lovelock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he has this idea
who?
About this.
Sorry, Daniel?
James Lovelock.
Yeah. Okay.
The Gaia Hypothesis.
Exactly.
Ah.
So it's like this idea of this, there's this underlying consciousness that is the planetary consciousness. And mm-hmm. and we have a like small conception of that because we, you know, use the internet and we have this idea of like the new sphere in that world. But there's other like very fascinating, you know, conscious activity out there, such as like mycelia, like mushrooms. The primeval consciousness of the planet, or the evolutionary consciousness of the planet, could practically be mushrooms because there's such an amazing network, you know, of interactions. So we don't see that sort of stuff. Very few people get educated in ecology. I mean, it's very rare that you know. I mean, I was lucky to get anything. Mm-hmm. I took a biology class, but
I remember this the one section in the Omniverse Development Dilemma where Michael Pollan was talking about mushrooms, and he's like, "We know very little about mushrooms and how they work, except that they're the opposite of like things that thrive on living things, and they thrive on dead things." And like, what's up with that?
Yeah, so, I mean that's pretty funny. Amazing in itself. They're the bridge between like from death to life, you know, and so that's really amazing. But the other thing is that. I think it's just a term that is becoming more popular because we are looking at that bigger context right now. We are looking at, you know, the globe. It's not about like the U.S. It's not about, you know, one particular place. It's about how can we like, you know, be aware of what's going on,
right.
You know, and in a global context.
So how do we start doing that? Like applying these principles and just doing something about that? What would you say?
I would say, you know, awareness is the first thing. So, and first of all, people need to know why this is important.
And, mm-hmm. and understand.
Yeah, nobody gets motivated about if I say okay, you should learn this. If I start talking about the what, no one's going to care. But if I'd say you should be interested in this because all the world's problems might be able to be solved in a garden. I mean, that's a little permaculture maxim. That's kind of an exaggeration a little bit.
I can believe it.
But there's a truth behind it, and that's because when you get involved in these sorts of things, when you get involved in organic gardening, or you get involved in permaculture, you get involved in eco-city development, or you get involved in just thinking and conceiving of space differently than it is now, you really realize that, oh my God, there's just a world of opportunities. There's just a world of opportunities, and there's just... And my hands and my energy can be a part of that, you know, and it's a change. I grew up learning about the eco side. You know, that's what I was taught in school. I was taught human beings cannot live in harmony with nature. And this is what we get hammered into like every day. You can BP oil spill, whatever.
The eco side?
The eco side. Okay. It's like genocide, but ecological genocide.
Gotcha. So okay.
That's what I was like hammered, you know, home since like middle school, you know,
right.
And then finding permaculture,
or just told that what we need to do is recycle,
or like doing things that are very like out of our hands, you know, and not really knowing. I mean, I know that I have commingled recycling in Olympia, where I live.
What is commingled recycling?
Well, that's where you can just throw it all in, okay. You know, just like. But I know that that probably gets shipped to China. And then I have no idea what happens to it there. And it probably doesn't... And then they get money, you know, to recycle it and to... We pay them to, you know, get it over there. So, yeah. It would be great if we were more progressive. Olympia is a really progressive place, but it could be even more progressive. Like Curitiba, Brazil has a citywide recycling where they recycle everything from their city in their city.
Right, and you get to see it. And they see it,
and they provide a whole lot of jobs, and they reclaim a whole lot of material, and it's amazing. And like they did that not because they were trying to be progressive, but because they didn't have any other choices. They needed to employ people. They needed to like get rid of all the trash that was building up. It was just getting that bad. And so sometimes, you know, sometimes we have to, you know, just take that extra step beyond just, oh, well, we're going to...
But if we don't have to think about our garbage and look at it, then isn't that better?
I mean, eventually, you see a lot of people who are like, man, I just want to go and I want to get my own little eco slice. And I have this desire too. I mean, it like pops up in my heart sometimes. Like, I want to go out and I want to find this perfect... ideal eco utopia to live in, and everything will be great there. But the truth is, we really need to work in places like New York City, and work in places where there's a conundrum. You know, there's a real question about what needs to be done, and that's because if you don't, then something's going to come along, like the BP oil spill, or like anything else. You know, natural gas disaster. I mean, people don't know it, but there was 3 natural gas disasters. Like just last week, and they're trying to like, you know, hydrofrack the groundwater of New York State. So you really can't avoid
I'm shutting my ears right now. Just kidding.
Yeah, no, I know we're supposed to be talking about the positive things. There are so many positive things. There's besides what
Daniel
has already accomplished in the movement. There are people that are emulating what he's done. And so there's like 1 million gardens, and also a movement to create 1 million forest gardens like around the U.S. And so there's all sorts of really, really positive things. Just last week was city repair. If people don't know about city repair in Portland, it's the most amazing thing. I mean, we're talking like 10 days.
Evan's joining us from the West Coast.
I'm from the West Coast.
Olympia.
I know. I wish I could sometimes be in the maw of the beast more.
No, but I will tell you, I mean, Portland, Oregon, it may not be the place that Mayor Bloomberg is looking to for examples, but I can learn from what Portland is doing at their city hall. I have a phone call schedule with Steve Cohn, who is in the sustainability office in Portland. He's a government employee who's working on climate change, and he's charged with food, which is something that New York City doesn't have somebody like Steve Cohn. But I can call up Steve Cohn and say, let me know what has been working for you in this garden, what hasn't been working for you, what can you do to help make sure? Because when New York City does something, we like to do it like big and fierce, and we don't want it to fail. And you know, we just want to make it work. So, Steve Cohn, you know, what can you tell us from Portland? So, thank you for invoking the West Coast. I mean, there's
convergence. We're having a mini convergence of East and West Coast right here.
Yeah.
Can we just take a quick break? I know, Evan, you picked a song, and we'll get on to more sunnier and positive changes. Be right. Summer, the bombing all has stopped, and people begin to sit and talk. Somewhere inside me, attic, stockbrokers can rest their bloodshot eyes. 'Cause there's nothing left to buy or sell, or kill or die for any. Property died.
the stars.
We're back on Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and Heritage Radio Network is what you're listening to. Thanks to our sponsor, Brooklyn Bowl, and thanks to our producer, Jack Inslee, and engineer, Nat Wiener. So we got Evan Shepke and Daniel Bowman-Simon. We were just having a riveting conversation about, you know, I can't even go into it, but it's too much.
We just found out what garden means.
Oh, we did? Okay. Jardin. Is that
someone
is it
tweeted?
French,
someone tweeted it in for us.
Okay.
And it just means enclosure, but we appreciate the tweet.
That doesn't
but
sound...
But it's a thousand-year-old word, so...
Okay.
That's cool.
Some credit.
Okay, enclosure.
Jardin, it's related to yard, in fact.
Yeah. Oh, jardin.
Enclosure.
Speaking of yards... I think we should get back to talking about what people can do.
What people can do, right. After they educate themselves, as you mentioned.
Step one, get rid of your grass.
Yes.
You don't need it, and it's expensive.
Attack on the Front Lawn. That was the subtitle of Edible Estates. A cool project all about, you know, the amazing phenomenon of the lawn, which has really, you know, it took root in English, you know, landscaping of gardens and how it was, you know, kind of nicely distributed. But it just went haywire after, I don't know when, at some point in American history. Everybody has to have a line, and it sucks a lot of water. How much water? I'm not really quite sure, but...
I believe at least 1% of water use is just golf courses and lawns. At least. I think it's
and
probably higher.
Let's
I think
face
it's like
it,
1.5.
It takes up a lot of your money, time, and energy to take care of your lawn. So why not, you know, take some money, time, and energy and grow some tomatoes and stuff?
I was in Stuyvesant Town last night. And they had the sprinklers on, and it was raining out. Go figure.
How many times have people seen that and just been like, what are we doing?
All right, so you can get rid of your lawn and maybe join a campaign like People's Garden NYC.
.org.
Definitely join that campaign. That is a good campaign. And also hook up with if your town has like a local permaculture guild or like any kind of free community gardening classes, go to those. I mean, they're out there and they're free. Permaculture guilds are supposed to offer free workshops and education. So that's like what it's designed to do. So find those people, go take free classes. I might be doing a, pay what you can, or like free class here in New York before I leave the East Coast. So
that's terrific.
Yeah, yeah. Do that.
Look forward to that.
Little intro.
I have a feeling a lot more people will be going to these workshops. Just in, you know, from what I've heard, everybody's really getting into gardening. I know New York Botanical Garden started this program last summer called Edible. What the hell is it called? The Edible Garden, I think. That was like a summer-long series of lectures, workshops on growing stuff last year. This year, they're really expanding the program. It's going to be really exciting. I think I'm teaching a cooking class July 11th, 10th. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be like chefs, everyone. It should be really exciting. It's fun to see chefs get behind this new... growth of gardening going on too.
Chefs love it. Can we talk about chefs and kids for a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, chefs love it because if you talk to 9.99 chefs out of 10, they are going to much prefer cooking with fresh ingredients. And fresh ingredients come from places nearby.
It makes them look good.
It makes them look
their
good.
Work, yeah.
It tastes better.
Their creations are more pretty.
Better.
They're tastier. Mm-hmm. So why not? And let's in terms of kids and cooking and getting them excited about all this stuff, I mean, I think Homer Simpson said, the kids are our future unless we stop them first. But kids can't be stopped. And
that's right.
And they're curious as all hell. And here's the thing. Evan was talking about biology and ecology and learning. 100 years ago, most Americans were growing up on farms. And so this stuff was just intuitive. It was exploring. It was playing by the creek or picking weeds or just digging in the dirt. And so you wouldn't necessarily need a science class. These days, everything in science class is so darn boring. I got suspended from school when I was little because I just wasn't having a good time in science class and mm-hmm. started throwing things. But if you get kids out in the garden, it calms them down. It makes them curious. There are always surprises in a garden, good, bad, strange, beautiful. And so if you could get the kids engaged, then they will start asking more questions about the food. They'll want to cook what they grow. They'll want to eat what they grow. If you try to tell a kid that they should eat a carrot or broccoli or lettuce,
say, ew.
They'll say, ew. But if they've grown it, oh, then the first thing they want to do is chomp on it.
It's so true.
And they'll be like, that one's mine. That one's
there's a lot.
Better.
There's a big movement right now that's getting, you know, there's some really great bloggers out there and really great people working on farm to school, the farm to school program. And it's tough because you're dealing with, like, the federal government allocates $1 per meal mm-hmm. per kid. That's all. $1. Yeah. So what do you get for a dollar? You get some corn dogs. I mean, I would keep the tater tots, but that's just me. But honestly, most of the stuff is just absolutely horrible. I don't know how I ate some of that stuff, really. I think as soon as I got to middle school, I was like all about the salad bar. But I mean, kids.
You had a salad bar in middle school?
I think so. Maybe it was high school. I don't know.
We had Taco Bell.
See, yeah. I didn't get any of that stuff. We didn't have any of the cool things.
We had an open campus, and you know.
But what would have been really cool is if we had fresh farm produce, or if some of the kids were growing some of the food that actually like is used in the school. That would have been really cool.
You know, it's funny. At the recent Hungry Filmmakers, we had showed us a film called Lunchline, and they talked a little bit about the history of school lunch program. And originally, when it was first instituted, it was a way to have farmers' surplus crops used up. They're like, what do we do with all this stuff? Let's start a school lunch program. And
I don't think it's changed at all, actually.
Now it's like excess stuff from the Cisco truck. That
I mean, I think it's...
Well, it was a union of some people were really interested in making sure that kids had food. And there were a lot of poor kids in mm-hmm. America who didn't have access to food at home. And then there were the people who were more looking out for the farmers. And they figured out that this was a bipartisan way to... be synergistic. I mean, it came out of something like
exactly.
a permaculture principle of like,
yeah.
let's mm-hmm. work together and figure out how we can
yeah.
make this happen. And
I guess this question is trying to connect those dots again and see if it'll work on such a large, you know, scale.
Yeah.
Well, examples
or
really
small
help.
Scale.
I mean, President Clinton, a couple of weeks ago, I heard him speaking and he was saying, why did Copenhagen fail so miserably? It's because all of these things that we're talking about are pie in the sky. If we had better examples of programs that worked, then that would help. So just building these little examples that do work, that show that these programs can thrive, is so important for making the larger argument.
I mean, the other reason it failed is because it was so segmented. You had all the people that were coming up with great solutions. It's not like there's not great solutions to a lot of the problems in the world. They're really right there. I mean, when you're talking about housing prices, great solution, community land trusts. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about agriculture, great solution, organic gardening and organic farming and permaculture. When you're talking about, workers' rights, finance, building democratic workplaces, great solution, co-ops. So
gotcha.
So there's definitely lots of solutions out there, but people who are on the policy side don't necessarily ever go visit those other people that are coming up with these solutions. So that's what does stand out about a city like Portland, and that's what needs to happen in a city like New York. I mean, people, when I was at City Repair a couple years ago, I saw city planners and the council members dancing on the dance floor with like people who were probably, you know, radicals and like really into.
Well, our mayor just did a performance with the cast members of Hair. So there is hope in that. And like you're saying, I mean, this is part of it. Policy makers live in their cubicles, but they don't have the opportunity to, I mean, they're not going to read every policy paper that people email them. They just don't have the time. They don't have the attention span, but they also don't have the time to do a million and one site visits. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's just really important from that perspective to get, I like to say, a garden is worth 1,000 policy papers, the same way, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. If you get the garden there, it speaks for itself, and it educates and it engages.
Well, let's start with the garden this summer, everyone. Thank you guys so much for sharing your thoughts. Again, we had Evan Shepke. Check out Permaculture Magazine, permaculture.tv, especially when he live blogs from the Convergence. We got Daniel Blumensimon. Thank you so much. peoplesgardennyc.org. Please check it out. I know you'll have fundraisers coming up. Sometime in store.
You want to cook?
Yes, absolutely. I'll be at the next one cooking.
Check out Kathy's recipes. They're really good.
Thanks. Yeah. Yay. Okay, let's go cook now. We'll be back next week. I'm your host, Kathy Array, and this is Let's Eat In. Thanks for listening. Love you.